This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast episode.
Do it better!
God, I hate the short leash. You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast episode number 74, sponsored by GeekArmor.com.
Could have been worse.
With the freighters towering over me, I can hear the jets flying overhead, making lines across the darkening.
Hello, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode number 74. My name is Ron, and I'm back from probation.
Yay.
And I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
And Connor.
Hello, jerk.
Let me tell you, it's been a long week. It's weird when you podcast and then you don't podcast and then you go back to podcasting. It just gets weird. So anyway, so for those of you who aren't in the know, we're from ifanboy.com. That's where we call home on the web. And that's where we like to read and talk about comics. And each week, one of us picks the best comic that came out this past week and writes a little review of it. You can go to ifanboy.com and read it. But then we come here and we talk about it on this year's show. But wait, there's more. We're going to talk about what happens in these comics. So that means, you know, some people get a little kind of, you know, touchy around the spoilers. So if you're one of those touchy people, put your hands to your sides and press pause.
How can you press pause with your hands at your sides?
That's a good point. I didn't think that through. So I'll be honest with you.
Not scripted
at all. So just be careful. We might ruin something for you, like the fact that Spider-Man.
We're going to do our damnedest.
Yeah, Spider-Man is Peter Parker. So this week, Connor has the pick, and speaking of Spider-Man.
The best comic book this week was Ultimate Spider-Man 107.
Isn't it nice to hear him say that with just no ambiguity at all?
So there's no equivocation, there's no conditions set to this one, it's just
no
the best one.
No,
not at all.
Nothing, yeah.
I put this comic down, and I was like, damn, that was a really good comic book.
This might be the best comic of the decade.
The single issue?
Yeah, the single issue. This is the best comic I've read in 10 years.
Listen, guys, it was good.
No, I think you could make a case for Ultimate Spider-Man being one of the best comic books in the last 10 years. But this particular issue itself had basically everything you're looking for in a comic book about a teen superhero. It had the whole romance angle. It had superhero costumed intrigue. It was laugh out loud funny at parts. It was really emotionally jarring at parts. This took the whole spectrum of comic books, I think. And after I finished reading it, I thought, you know what, that's going to be hard to beat. And it was. Nobody even came close.
This was hands down a modern day Marvel comic book. I mean, this is Spider-Man now. I mean, I was blown away by it.
And if you read this, it really puts the regular Marvel Universe Spider-Man to shame. I mean, it's not even. It's not even a contest.
Yeah.
But another reason why I like this comic was because the three of us often talk about the fact that we can't find any independent comic books that we like. Or the ones that we are like, they're all ending. And Ron's always looking for relationship comic books. this has a really great relationship story in it, and it's almost you don't need a black and white indie autobiographical relationship story, because I don't imagine one that would be written as well as Bendis is writing the Spider-Man, Kitty, Mary Jane love triangle.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, like, this, the first half of this book read like an episode of 90210. I loved it. I mean, it was great. It was just
people
like,
went, that's why I'm not reading it.
Or it read like an episode of Gilmore Girls.
Totally. Yeah. And the whole scene between Kitty and Peter Parker on the bleachers, where they have their first talk after Kitty and Peter were dating, and then Peter got back with Mary Jane, but he never really told Kitty. She found out.
It all happened so quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, it happens very quickly, and he didn't get a chance to tell her before she saw Peter. I think were they kissing or hugging or.
I think they were kissing. It was right.
Yeah, she saw them kissing, and that's how she found out they were no longer dating.
Well, you know, maybe Kitty shouldn't have snuck up on Peter in her invisible X-plane. Maybe, giving him a chance to talk to her about it.
Exactly. But, well, this is the first conversation since that happened, and since she has transferred now into Peter and Mary Jane's school, which was a brilliant move.
How genius was that? That was great. And I gotta say that when she comes to the – when she gets introduced to the class and everybody starts freaking out that she's a mutant and all that kind of stuff, and the whole time Ultimate Jessica Jones is there, who's like –
yes.
The school reporter, and she's taking pictures with the camera phone, and that one shot at the very end of it when the teacher finally gets control of the class, and then you just see the camera phone, and it's a shot of Peter, and he looks just distraught. I thought that was great. That was poetic. It was awesome.
I love the fact that Ultimate Jessica Jones is in this book, and I love the fact that it looks like she may end up having a little bit of a bigger role than just a throwaway like cameo,
right,
which is awesome.
Because she's not going to be Spider-Girl.
No. Well, you never know. But the scene where Kitty comes into the class and it's awful just the way she's treated by the students, like almost like a dancing monkey or a freak. That was great, and then the whole heart to heart between Peter and Kitty was great. And then on top of that, the whole superhero side of the story is that a bunch of the New York City heroes are gathering together to take out the Kingpin.
I'm Crazy Moon Knight.
It's Crazy Moon Knight, and it's Daredevil and Doctor Strange and Shang-Chi and Iron Fist and Spider-Man, and they're all meeting secretly on the rooftops to plot taking out Kingpin. And I thought there were parts of that scene that were just hilarious, and I laughed out loud funny.
And that's the thing that's one of the things that makes the Ultimate Universe not better but different than the Marvel Universe. Like, if these characters got together, they're all established. They have their voices. They have their things. And here they're still kind of new. So
also,
like,
they all know each other.
Right.
In the Marvel Universe.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And they know each other here, but not as well as they do. You know what I mean?
And it's funny because that was the point of
Civil War. Yeah. They almost already have that world. It's just called the Ultimate Universe.
Right, but you know what? Yeah, exactly, which is a good point. But conversely, specifically with Daredevil and what Bendis did with Daredevil, is that remember when the shit hit the fan with Daredevil and the identity and everything? And he had Luke Cage and Iron Fist as his bodyguards. And like, so it's like almost like it was, even though they all knew each other, Bendis was still able to spin it in a way that was creative, where I don't think Bendis would have needed Civil War. But it's cool to see what he's doing here, and that, you know, they don't really know each other. They're still feeling each other out. Moon Knight's crazy. Doctor Strange is a celebrity, you know, and apparently Iron Fist is a turncoat. So which pissed me off. I was like, oh, not Danny Rand.
Is it okay for anybody to be changed in the Ultimate Universe?
No, not Danny Rand.
Right, but maybe he's the double agent.
Maybe he's not really a turncoat.
They're running the double agent.
The double agent.
It's like a David Mamet movie. You never know who's on whose side to the land.
That's totally going to be it.
Totally.
He loves Mamet, you know, Bendis.
Yeah, he does, yeah. Wow, there we go.
He's just a Spanish prisoner.
Yeah. That movie made my head hurt.
Oh,
but
slow down talking.
This, are you talking about the movie now? I see. This is just a great comic. I don't know any way to describe it other than the fact that I'm going to be sad when Bagley leaves. I know people don't necessarily love his art, but I associate it so much with this book now that it's hard to think of it any other way.
I'm actually looking at some of the individual drawings in this, and a lot of it seems kind of rushed, but then I'm looking back at how much he drew. Like, if you look at the very first section, it's all these kids in the classroom, and it's just like a ton of people and faces and stuff like that. Then you come back to these other scenes, and you've got like six superheroes standing around. Poor guy must have taken him a week and a half to do this issue.
There's also that one shot. This is one great shot, I thought, of Spider-Man's with his aunt May, who's in a coma, and he's trying to decide if he should go out on the patrol, or if he should and meet Daredevil, or if he should stay with his aunt. And he decides to go out. There's just one full page shot of him swinging across the city. I thought that was all.
I noticed that.
Brilliant.
I thought that was a really good page. Yeah, I thought the same thing. One more thing I wanted to mention about the book is that I really like how Peter's personality has a difference when he's in costume and
he's a lot more confident in costume.
Right, in his Peter Parker life, and I assume that's something that's being done deliberately. You know, in his Peter Parker life, he's not sure what's going on, but he's this little kid and he's willing to stand up to these other five dudes who are, you know, adults and, you know, big buff superheroes and celebrities and stuff, and he's just willing to sit there and tell them like it is. Like when he's got the one frame of Daredevil standing over him, looking down at him, and he's pointing his finger at him, going, "No, you listen," you know.
Yeah.
That's I really like that.
I mean, it's just masterful. I mean, it's great. I mean, I the layouts in this issue were just amazing. Like, especially the classroom layouts. Like, I think I think Josh has been pretty harsh on Bagley in the past, but I've liked him since before this book. So I'm a little hesitant. Like, I'm curious to see what Stuart Immonen's gonna do to his art style, because I know he's changing it a little to match the book. But I haven't always been a fan of his work, so I'm curious to see what's going to happen. So, but I'll still be here for the writing. So,
I'm sure it'll be fine. Bendis tends to tailor his writer for the artist he's got working with him.
Right. Yeah, and he really gets excited for when the artist tries something new. You know what I mean? Like, to hear him talk about Maleev trying that new thing with Avengers. Like, he really likes pushing the medium. Yeah. So.
Well, he's a pure comics guy. I mean, he's just everything about comics he loves.
Yeah. Exactly.
Shall we explore the corner of another Ultimate book?
Sure.
The X-Men, which I'm now reading.
You are? Oh, nice.
Yeah,
good.
I've been reading it since you picked it.
Yeah, oh, good. Kirkman's doing a great job. It's something interesting, you know, as we segue between Spider-Man and X-Men, and not, you know, I was actually talking about this the other day, and if you read Augie DeBleek's column in CBR, he was talking about Spider-Man. He was talking about what was going on in 616 with the black costume and everything. And he pretty much laid out how there's a template of things that happened to Spider-Man that have happened all through the years, where you know he gets really angry because somebody's hurt his family and he lashes out, and or somebody offers him to lose his powers or to stop being Spider-Man, and he wrestles with that concept. And that's kind of been alluded to in Ultimate Spider-Man. Like, it just happened with, you know, Fantastic Four being able to, you know, Reed saying, "Listen, I can take your powers away," and him having to think about it and all that kind of stuff, and someone close to him getting hurt. I mean, it's this template of the Spider-Man story. That resonated when I was reading Ultimate X-Men number 80, because this is a template of an X-Men story. Like, the classic X-Men stories are involved with Xavier dying or leaving, them questioning the dream, people leaving, people coming, you know what I mean? And so I thought Kirkman really was, you know, in this different Ultimate Universe, has been really, really true to that template of the X-Men stories, you know?
So you start with that basic skeleton framework, and then you lay your unique voice over it, I suppose?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because even though this was the typical Xavier's dead, what do we do? And, you know, oh, Wolverine left, you know, kind of story, which I've read 17 times. It felt completely different.
So are you enjoying it now than you have in the past?
Yeah, no, I definitely. This is a renaissance of Ultimate X-Men. So
I got to tell you, I was shocked when I found out Xavier was still alive.
Well, yeah, true.
I was like, oh my god, I just didn't see it coming.
Nice.
That was just shtick. I'm sorry.
So yeah, but
are you feeling better about the whole Cable as Wolverine in the future thing or not?
I would like to know more. You know, I like the little robot. I like that guy. Mm-hmm. But I would like to know more about it.
Is this the first appearance of Ultimate Pyro?
Yes, I believe it is. Which honestly is a much better representation of Pyro, because he's all burned and stuff.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's more realistic that he'd be burned up.
But even more so is that it's the first mention, or the first reference to the Ultimate Morlocks, and the Morlocks were one of my favorite things of the X-Men canon. This idea of all these, you know, these mutants who are not pretty and not X-Men living in the subway tunnels in New York. I mean, it's a great concept. So,
what do you guys think of the art by Yannick Paquette?
I think it gets the job done. I don't mean that in a backhanded kind of way. I mean, like, it's good. It's not bad. You know?
It's not my favorite, but I think it's pretty good. I think it works.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, I've read a lot of reaction people who hate it, but I enjoy it. I think he's really good.
You give Cyclops an Aaron Eckhart chin.
Yeah, yes. I thought Cyclops was great in this issue, by the way. Cyclops stepping up. He was good.
You just look for that anywhere you can get it.
You'll take Cyclops table scraps.
I love Bishop trying to get Iceman to get off his ass.
Yeah, well, that's funny because that's another – I mean, that's been a thread that's been through the X-Men canon for, you know, 20, 25 years is that so many people see the potential in Iceman and he just never does it. It's like, because if you think about it, his powers are really, really, really strong. Like, he could be one of the most powerful mutants, and he decides to ice up and make surfboards. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't, you know, play with the moisture in the air or the, you know, temperature and that kind of stuff. You know, like it's
well, that's an instance where the Ultimate Universe works more than the regular universe in that if he is like 14, 15, 16, like he is in this book, that's more of a believable reaction. Whereas if he's in his 20s, young adult in the regular universe, it doesn't make sense that he wouldn't really buckle down and try to figure his powers out.
The exact opposite. At one point in the 80s, he got frustrated, quit, and became an accountant. He's like, I can't do this. I'm not good. You know, which was great at the time. Unfortunately, 20 years later, he's still doing it, which I see your point there. But
is he still an accountant?
No, he's not. Well, I guess once a CPA, always a CPA.
He's like, you can see him at like an H&R Block at like 8:30 at night, in a rumpled shirt, his gut sticking out. He's chilling drinks for his coworkers. Yes, fine.
Around March, all the superheroes start showing up.
Okay, you can deduct that. Yeah, sure.
Well, did you buy the cape for the show, or was it more?
So Ultimate X-Men was good. It was a good week for the Ultimate books.
I was hesitant whether I would want to keep reading this because I sort of started. I started reading at the end of the last arc, and I was like, well, maybe I won't know what's going on. And I did. Like, this is actually with my sort of very small knowledge of what's happened. You could pick this up and read it from here, and you know. Like, a lot of people like to go back and find it, but I think part of the fun is to start a comic book in the middle and then try to figure out what's going on. I love doing that for some. I always have.
I like knowing nothing about what came before.
No, but, I mean, like, when I first started reading comics, there wasn't such a thing as jumping on points so much.
Yeah, you just had to get in there and figure it out. Some work.
I always liked that. Yeah. And that was fun because it's the same discovery as if it started new, but it's not being spoon-fed to you.
Right, and I love having to go ask people what happened and who's this person and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's I actually really find that fun, so I don't so much think people need to have everything spoon-fed to them so much and read from the beginning. Sometimes things are really good from the beginning, but you know, sometimes when you're 80 issues in, that's not really feasible. But comics should be written so that, you know, you can start reading them and enjoy them. And if, you know, you've got a half a brain, you can probably figure out what's going on. But my point being, I having read the last three of these, I really like this. And I think I want to keep going from here.
Awesome.
Good.
So when Josh and I went to the comic store this week, we're buying our books. And I walked over to him and I showed him Action Comics 847. And I pointed to the name of the writer. And he just went, oh, come on.
I didn't buy it because of that.
Well, I checked on
which we should we should clarify. It's not anything against Dwayne McDuffie. It's just the fact that it's another fill-in issue.
Right. Oh no! I'm against Dwayne McDuffie.
Really?
I'm just kidding.
I checked on I don't know like some comic book store's website and it said Richard Donner. So I was like, okay, and I put it on my list and I got there and I would have bought it because I guess some retailers have faulty information.
Wait a minute. Where do you check for your listing at comics?
Midtown Comics. I didn't check my listing there. I go there and see what the issue looks like and to see the little blurb.
Why don't you go to DCComics.com where they have the full breakdown? Yeah,
that would make sense. And okay. I will do that from now on. But well, the other thing is what I do is I pull up the Midtown page and I look at which books they have coming out, because it's not just the DC ones, so like I check out the Image ones that are coming out.
You know that we put the shipping list on iFanboy every week, right?
I know that. When I go through there, there's no descriptions or what anything is.
Right, okay.
So if I see like an Image number one book, I like to go and look what it is.
Unfortunately,
Image Comics I don't think is arranged it that well.
Well, now that we took this extra special trip into our lives, let's talk about Action Comics 847, which was a fill-in, although...
You didn't point this out to me until after I bought it.
Didn't I?
Because I wouldn't have bought it.
You're right. I pointed out to you back when we got back to work. That's right.
However, I didn't mind it.
Yes, it was. Didn't it sort of take place during the storyline too?
Yep.
It was like a side trip.
It was during the storyline. It was Pa Kent, who's apparently about the same age as Superman.
All right, we'll talk about that in a minute. That's a whole.
He was telling a story to Ma Kent, Pa and Ma. about something that him and Clark did together, which you know was like, okay, it's if you're gonna do a fill-in, this is a good way to do it.
Yes, no, I had no problem with the story. It was a fun little story. It works within. That's a good way to get around the slowness of the main story is to go off and tell a side character story during the main story. My biggest and I liked the art. I really liked the art style. It was kind of a bit of a Tony Harris ripoff, but still, yeah, it was good. But my biggest problem was he draws Clark and his father look almost the same age.
Yeah, the Kents were not old enough.
They were not old at all, and I think he draws Superman too old, which is what I think a problem across the board in DC is that he's drawn way too old.
Do you know how old Superman's supposed to be?
I think the last time they actually said anything, it was like 32, 33. Yeah. And he's drawn way older than that.
It's funny because I've been reading comics for years, but I've really only read like a handful of Superman books. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, this is good, but haven't they done this? Like, I just can't imagine there's anything left to do with Superman anymore. I imagine he's one of the most challenging characters to write.
He's challenging because they don't actually let you tell any stories with him. Mm-hmm. You can't actually ever change Superman.
You can't break him down. You can't do to Superman what Bendis did to Matt Murdock.
No, you can't do any of that stuff because he's a corporate icon. So he fights a lot of big monsters and robots and aliens and...
Which is boring as shit.
Yeah. Which is why I keep buying the books whenever they put a new team on it, and then after about 6 or 7 issues, I end up dropping them, just because nothing ever happens. But I don't understand why his father is being drawn like he's in his late 40s.
Meh. If you let that go, though, and you wanted a good Superman one-shot story, for
sure,
some reason you were craving Superman, you could go out and get Action 847. Duane McDuffie seems to have a pretty good read on the characters. It was well-written.
Ron, you didn't buy that?
Did not buy it.
Well, then.
I really liked the art style outside of, you know, the particular rendition, which didn't really bother me so much because, like I said, I don't follow Superman all that closely. I don't know. How many times? I don't know what the Kents are supposed to be now. Have they been retconned?
No, they're old grandparents in every other comic.
Okay. This is Ultimate Jonathan Kent.
Was I the only person that bought Wonder Woman's number 6?
You, in fact, were.
Yes.
All right.
Monologue.
Wonder Woman has been a bit of a problem.
Wonder Woman, you've been a bit of a problem. We're going to have to let you go.
They started off with Alan Heinberg. He did the first two or three issues. Those took about a year to come out.
Damn you, Heinberg.
And they were really good. It's just they took a year to come out. And the Dodsons were on the art. And then they did a fill-in issue with 5, which I thought was really good. And then issue 6 is the new writer, Jody Picou.
That's the woman that went to college with Jim Lee, right? She's a novelist.
Is it? Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. There's a thread up about it on iFanboy.
Yeah, she's the new writer, and Drew Johnson's the artist, and I really like this comic. I like Wonder Woman stories where she's actually a superhero, because everything else gets muddled into the whole Greek mythology thing, and it gets just too wrapped up in it. Like, Greg Rucka wrote Wonder Woman a few years ago, and I didn't like it. He delved too much, for my tastes, into the mythology, and I find that stuff boring. But I like her as a superhero. They don't often portray her.
You like this?
Yes, I do. I liked it a lot.
I was curious because people were really not liking it.
No, I liked this. I enjoyed this quite a bit. There's a lot of interesting and clever commentary on her as a character, because she's not very popular, and they reflected that in the story, that all of her toys were discounted, and people are just dismissing her within the DC universe, you know, in favor of Superman and Batman.
Really?
Yeah.
They touched on the fact that her toys are discounted in the comic book.
Yeah, like they went to a. They went. The whole premise is that Wonder Woman is not. She's trying to live a life amongst the people. She's an agent for the department of the superhero department of the government, which his name escapes me right at the moment. Right. She's walking around in her civilian identity, and they go into a store, and she's looking at the toys. There's Batman figures, there's Wonder Woman, there's Superman figures, and the Wonder Woman toys are all 75% off because nobody buys them.
Wow. One of the other criticisms I read was that it was written like somebody said the writer hadn't watched anything since the TV show.
I, I don't know what that means. The whole point is her trying to re-enter society and get in touch with humanity, and like she didn't know much about humanity. She doesn't know how to pump gas, which makes complete sense to me. Like, why would Wonder Woman know how to pump gas?
George Bush didn't know what the grocery scanner was.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably most people. Let's face it. She lived in a Greek island and she lived on a base up in the moon. Why would she know how to pump gas? She wouldn't. She wouldn't know how to do any of this stuff, which is the whole point of this series.
If she lived in New Jersey, she wouldn't know either.
Exactly. I know people from New Jersey don't know how to pump gas.
And they don't even have powers.
Exactly.
They've got a certain power, but nothing you
want. It's more of a smell. Everyone like who's in New Jersey, don't write in. We know. we're kidding. Anyway.
It smells bad.
at least it doesn't smell as bad as Staten Island.
Oh.
You know he's always come from Ron. Just in case we get the, you all know. I do not own what he says.
And the other thing is that she doesn't know how to use the subway, which also makes sense because if you go to any new subway system, usually people are confused. And if you're used to flying and you never used the subway before, you wouldn't know how to use the card and all that stuff. So
she would ask me where to go on the subway because people ask me all the time because I'm apparently the most non-threatening person in New York City. It's true. I'm constantly getting asked directions. Excuse me, non-threatening white boy.
So I'm really excited for this reboot. I like Superman. I always buy Wonder Woman reboots hoping it'll be good this time, and usually it's not. So for now, I'm excited.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
Excellent.
There's no Dodsons on that, is there?
No, there's not. It's Drew Johnson. No,
they only work with TV writers.
Dodson. We got Dodson.
Green Lantern number 18, which I'm curious to see what you guys thought of it. Yeah, we all bought that.
I can speak to this because I think in the same way, all I saw on the website was people saying it sucked, and I was like, I didn't think it sucked.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, I did too.
I totally had fun with it. What do you people
want? Yeah, so did I. Yeah, it was awesome.
Also, this art is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm flipping through right now going, I don't even think I noticed it when I was reading it the first time, but now that I am, the coloring and everything.
Yeah,
this book,
it's amazing. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, the only thing I could nitpick a little is that I didn't like Hal Jordan's hair.
That's you know what? Dude needs an update. We've been complaining that they're keeping him as like a man.
Yeah, he's kind of it's more modern kind of hairstyle than it would.
Little indie boy.
Yeah, than the standard like crew, you know.
But no, I thought this issue was great. I thought this is the Green Lantern. I still have a problem with. I feel like I'm supposed to know more about this cowgirl character than I do. Mm-hmm. But I think that's my fault, not Jeff Johnson's fault.
Hot chick in a tank top and a cat and a hat.
I think all we really know about her is the fact that she's one of his fellow pilots and she's a hot blonde who likes him and he likes her and then they're just starting to get together.
Carol Ferris
shows up as Star Sapphire, and now Cowgirl Star Sapphire, and that's a great twist. Because
what I thought was great is that you don't need to know about the history of Hal and Carol Ferris. He explained it in enough words to be like, he's like, oh, we used to date, you know, but she's married now. You know,
I
like,
was just glad to get a little pie face in the beginning.
Yeah. Hey!
But...
I didn't write it.
But and the Dave Gibbons backup was great. Yeah,
so. I didn't like that so much.
Oh, I liked it. I liked it.
I don't know. I had a hard time getting through that one, but not because of Dave Gibbons, just because I want the Sinestro Corp to start. I don't necessarily need to hear the whole history of it.
See the build up. Well, they're going to start another book called the Sinestro Corp.
Well, I'm not buying that. But
they're going to start it, and we're going to see the end of that.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if they're doing that. So.
No, but this was a great Green Lantern comic. This was fun. Yeah. I love Crazy Ex-Girl from the Superpowers. That's a great, great story.
Awesome.
I had no problem. I don't know. I don't know what people didn't like about it. It wasn't like the most original story in the world, but you know, it's a problem for Hal to have to deal with, and it wasn't like Hal feeling sorry for himself and people, you know, making him feel bad. So, you know, what's the problem?
Yeah.
And it was really this art's great. I've said it before, but I keep looking through it. It reminds me of Phil Noto a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very, very good. So.
Daniel Acuna, Ron, you got something offbeat.
Yeah, well, a little offbeat. I mean, aside from the superhero kind of stuff, the Pirates of Coney Island number 5 came out from Image this week, and I've been reading this book from the beginning, and I don't know why I picked it up, because the first issue cover kind of had that kind of punky kind of feel to it, and it's we're up to issue number 5 of an 8-issue run, and it's just a lot of fun.
What's the premise of it?
The premise is that this new kid shows up in Coney Island and he gets, you know, jumped by one gang, and another gang kind of takes him under his wing, and there are all these little warring gangs that fight at night. And one group are the pirates and the other group are the cherries, which are girls. And
it's the Warriors.
Yeah, no, well, no. I mean, in that the Warriors was a bunch of gangs. I mean, it's not
West
like
Side Story.
Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, but there's no real romance. I mean, just the fact that the common thread.
But there's dancing.
There's no dancing. But the thing is that it's not, like I said, it's not the best comic book in the world. This by no means is Watchmen or anything like that. It's very kind of surfacey in terms. It's pretty much violence and that's about it. But there's a subtle little story. Actually, it might be a little West Side Story because the new guy and one of the girls from the rival gang hook up at the end after they have a freaking bloody knife fight. And it just ends on a great panel where they're just laying in a pool of blood and knives are at either side of them, and then the girl's got her hand down his pants and they're making out. So
is her name Maria?
No, it's not Maria. But I don't know. I mean, but the thing is that it's written by Rick Spears, and it's the art's by Vasilis Lolos, who I probably mispronounced. I'm sorry. And the coloring is just really, really good. It was colored by Nick Filardi, and like the art just jumps off every page. It's got a lot of dynamicism to it. It really kind of flows really well, and
dynamism
is that dynamicism?
I don't know.
Dynamism. Yeah, it's very dynamic. The pages are very dynamic. And I guess Vasilis's art reminds me almost of like the Gorillaz style art, you know, the band, you know, the Damon mm-hmm. Albarn band. It reminds me a little bit of that with the big kind of eyes and the you know, I don't know. But it's been a lot of fun. So it's 5 issues into an 8-issue run, and if anybody's looking for, I don't even have anything to compare it to, really. You know, like it's very it's you know, kind of punk inspired gang violence, and it's
which gang wears baseball uniforms?
None.
Interesting.
I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about now.
Neither do I. I'm not even in it. Am I supposed to get that joke?
Am I the only person that's seen the Warriors?
Oh yeah, right. Oh yeah, I haven't seen it in years, but yes, I was off of the Warriors. I dismissed it that quickly. But yeah, Pirates of Coney Island. Pick it. You could probably easily find issues 1 through 4. But it's a good book. I would recommend it. I would recommend it. So, yeah, definitely in trade. So,
well, there you go.
All right.
Those are books of the week. If there are any other books you want to talk about that we haven't talked about, then go to ifanboy.com and there's the pick of the week thread. You can talk about stuff there. And
there are definitely lots of others worth talking about, and we'll continue to do so there.
Yeah, this week was sort of, going into it, kind of looked blah, but it ended up being pretty solid.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right, so if you need shirts, go to geekarmor.com. They sell t-shirts with the geek in mind, with a heavy focus on comic book t-shirts and a nice selection of video games, sci-fi, movie, and TV shirts. You're sure to find something you would like. Check out their latest original designs. It's a red shirt with a phaser hole in the front. And it says, I went on an away mission and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. Which probably isn't so new anymore. So go to geekarmor.com and check them out today and tell them my fanboy sent you.
Right. So the email deluge continues, and our first email comes from Mike G from Canada, who writes in saying that Connor mentioned on the forums that iFanboy as a whole is generally very strongly anti-CGC, anti-grading, anti-slabbing, anti-speculation.
That's in caps.
Yeah, he's yelling at us.
Well, I did that. I wrote that in caps on the forums.
He's wondering why we're against the whole collecting for cash aspect of comics. Did we ever get into that collector mentality, maybe during the early 90s money grab period? Do we keep our comics in bags and boards, or we just read them and toss them in a long box? And what's the most you've ever spent on an individual comic? So,
good questions all.
What's our position on collecting for cash?
We're all
bad.
We're all fairly similar to that. I mean, I assume that if you guys were like me, you know, because when money got into it and that started happening, the crash of the 90s happened.
Yeah.
And that's basically why I don't like it, because it made covers and flashy things make it, you know, that was
the priority. It wasn't the content. It was, how can I sell this comic from the cover alone?
And it very nearly killed the comics industry entirely.
Well, not the comics industry. It would have killed mainstream Marvel DC comics. It wouldn't have killed comics.
The thing is, those mainstream comics are what keep comic stores open. right. for the most part. Without Marvel and DC, most comic shops wouldn't make enough to stay open.
No, I mean, I'm not even talking about comic shops. I mean, there would have been independent comics. There would have been comics. They just wouldn't.
Yeah,
have
comics wouldn't have died. Yeah, but I know what you mean. But for me, it's more personal in that I played the money game in the early 90s.
You did?
Oh yeah, I bought a bunch of books. I tried selling books, and it was almost one of my early business lessons where I realized that there was a lot more supply than there was demand. And even to this day, eBay changed everything. But I mean, I tell people who have comics, they're like, "Can I sell them?" I'm like, "Well, if it's worth $50, you hope you can get $25 for it." You know what I mean? Like, it's always like it just have
worth $25.
If it's worth 25, you get 13. You know what I mean?
That's like, what I'm saying.
Then it's worth 13. It's only worth what you can get for it.
Right. No, but the problem is that things like Wizard are over. I guess they're overpricing what the for things from the demand. Now CGC, the reason why we're anti CGC is because I don't know if people understand exactly what happens with that. But you send them your comic book, they look at how the grade it is, they give it a grade, and then they seal it in plastic, never to be opened again.
Yeah, it's not like a backing board. It's in a plastic slab.
And the thing is that the moment you open the plastic slab, that's when the grade is no longer valid. So it's like, I don't know about you, but I like to read my comics, you know.
That's
so
what they're for. They're not so right, I can exactly. look at the cover and the ad in the back.
Exactly. But that said, I'm the last one out of the three of us who still bags and boards all my comics.
Yeah, but it's different, but you're not doing it.
Yeah, you're doing it to keep them in good condition.
Yeah, I do it because I'm obsessive compulsive.
It's for you. It's not right. so that they'll be worth something. You're not
right, exactly.
planning on your retirement.
Right, like, exactly.
You couldn't look at a comic book and be like, "Oh, that's near mint, fine." You don't know.
Right. I have no freaking clue. It's hysterical. You should see me when I'm going in my store and when I'm buying old issues, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm looking for X-Men number 19." Like, "Oh, here's a VF copy." And I was like, "What the hell does that mean?" I was like, "How much is it? Just give me bottom line. How much?"
Yeah, no, we don't. This is it's completely antithetical to the whole point of comic books.
Yeah, what's the most you ever spent for a comic book?
Recently,
like a single issue.
The last time I bought a back issue, like really, like that wasn't I wasn't just picking up old issues off the racks or whatever, so I could read a whole story. The last time I bought, like, it was on the wall or in somewhere and cost more than like cover price. Was probably in the first time I went to San Diego Comic-Con in 2000, I bought JLA number 1 Grant Morrison's for like $17-$18.
Wow.
I don't know why I did that.
That's good to have.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, there's I'm not going to tell you there's not a historical value behind some of this. Now, and also when we talk about speculation, you know, would I pay money if I had it to buy like Showcase 22, the first appearance of Hal Jordan?
That's not speculation, though. That's actual value.
Right. No, I'd love to have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to own that. But when we're talking about stuff from the 90s and later.
Right. Yeah. No. Well. Yeah. There's. I mean, when you're talking about spending, you know, I mean, like, I spent $8,000 on my copy of Amazing Fantasy number 15, and that made sense at the time.
Spent how much?
I'm kidding. the most I've ever spent was X-Men number 18, which is 1965, and I think I spent $75 on that. And let me tell you, it's a shit condition.
Yeah, I remember where you showed it to us.
Well, most of those books are in shitty condition.
I love that book, though. I like
right,
it.
Right, no, totally. If it's got – were you buying it so that you could later turn around and sell it, or were you buying it because you loved it as a, you know, a reader and as a –
I'm buying it in A to read it, and then in my effort to have a complete run.
Right, but that's still not speculation, though.
Right. No. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So.
I think I don't know how much the most I spent on a book. The famous one is that I always remember is buying Silver Surfer 50 for $20.
You see, ripped off.
In like 92 or whatever it was, but I mean, I'm sure I've bought back issues for more at some point in my life, but I haven't bought a back issue in probably 10 or 15 years. So who knows?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Because now we have trades, so.
Yeah, exactly. I don't buy back issues anymore.
Because the thing is, you go back then and you buy one back issue for $20, you get the first issue. Now you spend $20, you get the first 10 issues.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right.
Vito D from New York writes in and says, "Are you guys reading Checkmate? Holy shit, the last issue was killer. This is quite possibly the best DC book published since Gotham Central. My question is this. First, are we reading it? And second, if any of you are, what do you think DC needs to do to give this book a higher profile? Because this book should never be canceled."
Vito, he's right. This is a fantastic – I'm even reading this book.
Yeah.
I mean
– he's right, too. I thought the last issue was really good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And hopefully it doesn't go the way of Manhunter and get canceled, renewed, and all that kind of deal.
Here's the problem is that – it's really hard to promote books that are heavy, no matter what. And this book doesn't have anybody in it.
Well, the thing what they're doing is Checkmate and The Outsiders are having a multi-part crossover, which they've been promoting online. Because if I know you guys don't read Outsiders, but it has been dovetailing story-wise with Checkmate. They've been dealing with similar problems and organizations, and they reference each other. Yeah. And I guess they're coming to a head. What's happening is Checkmate is sort of the government organization in the DCU, and Outsiders are really a rogue superhero group. They take out governments, they take out anybody they think is bad. So kind of like the DC Authority. And Checkmate is now going to step in and try to stop the Outsiders. And Winnick and Rucka, the two writers of the two books, are going to collaborate and write the books together as cool. Winnick and Brubaker did on Gotham Central.
Cool.
So they're not going to switch off issues. Like it'll be Checkmate co-written by Rucka and Winnick, and it'll be Outsiders co-written by Rucka and Winnick. So if anybody's interested, I know Josh may want to check it out because it's going to be Winnick writing, you know, Nightwing, and he said he's going to deal a lot with Nightwing and Sasha because it's the first time they've ever actually met. Okay. But it's going to be an interesting crossover. I don't know
if that's going to get more people to read Checkmate and stay with it. It's a tough one because
the thing is that I'm a firm believer that all comic companies like Marvel and DC should have a book like Checkmate being published at any given time. That's like that's really high quality, a creative darling that might not have the best sales. Unfortunately, sales tend to lead, and if it's not selling well, and I don't know how Checkmate is selling.
It's not selling. It's not horrible, but it's not good either.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I think the problem with it is there's nobody in it who's recognizable. And right. So sort of the stalwart people are like, Greenlee, I'm not buying it.
As cheesy as it is, what they need to do is they need to get freaking Wizard or somebody to write an article about it and dub it the 24 of comics. Like I said, when I reviewed it a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it totally is.
It's the 24 of comics. If you like 24, you will love this comic book.
Well, so. The other thing that has to happen then is that if they always do this, and what will happen is it'll end up on the chopping block, and then there'll be an online petition, and then it will or won't be saved. But you know, people have got to be like, if you like this book, you've got to get your friends to buy it and talk about it. And if you know you've got other podcasts or you're doing whatever, you know, we're talking about it. That's what we can do. And
we can thank Daryl for basically shaming us into buying this. So
that's true. I forgot about that.
Possibly the best thing Daryl's ever done.
The best thing Daryl's ever done was that voicemail from the bus.
Yeah, that's true.
But we can't thank him for shaming us into buying Checkmate, and that's something we appreciate. It does work both ways.
But you're not wrong. It's a damn fine book.
And there is a trade out now. There's a trade of the first six issues. So if you're thinking about checking it out, yeah, I bet it reads really, really good trade form, actually. Yeah.
So everybody who's listening who's not reading Checkmate, go read Checkmate and help us save it. So, because now we're the forerunners of the Save Checkmate campaign.
All right. I don't know that it needs saving, though. That's the thing. I've not heard anything about it being trouble.
Are we going to turn it into an endangered species before it is one?
No, it's not.
Save the Checkmates!
So our next email comes from Ollie, who is a 14-year-old comic fan, so there's another teenager. We've been hearing a lot from the teenagers, which is awesome, so please keep them coming in. Let us know that you're out there. He really likes our show, but he wants to know why the hate on Justice League of America and Wolverine Origins. Brad Meltzer's story is great, and it had him guessing in Red Tornado's fight with Grundy. Wow, just wow. Way to go, Ed Bennis, great art. Wolverine Origins is a great look at Wolverine, drawing from his hidden past to the story of some great woe. Never thought of those moments. Steve Dillon's art is great, except for the nipples, which are strange. I mean, Ollie's nipples don't look like that. He's just wondering why we don't really like those books, and if he's totally mislistening to our comments.
Why don't you start with Origins, since you're the only person that's read it.
Before mislistening to our comments, we don't all hate it.
Right. Yeah, I think he's dead on with – no, he's not dead on, but he's close with Wolverine Origins. I read Wolverine Origins purely for my Steve Dillon fix. I love Steve Dillon's art, and it's fantastic. Daniel Way, I do not know what the hell he's doing. And I know he's gotten a lot of flack online, but I'm sorry, dude. It's just like close up shop, you're done. You know, like it's bad. It's really bad.
So you don't like it, and that's why you don't.
Correct. I buy Wolverine Origins purely for the art.
Why is it that – I mean, I know – again, from our forums and our community, lots of diehard Wolverine fans recently have given up the book, and that was a hard thing to do.
Haven't given it up.
No, they have. They've given it up with this issue. Why is it so bad? Like, what is it about the story?
Because the problem is that the concept was, okay, great, Wolverine got his memory back after House of M, so now he knows the truth, and he's gonna be looking for answers. And to me, that sounds like a great 4-issue mini. And somewhere along the line, and I thought this was a mini. Somewhere along the line, it became an ongoing. And there was a great thing where he got some sword, and Captain America got involved, and blah blah blah. And then now it's changed, and now we find out that he has a son who has a really bad mohawk, and like it's like they already did this with X-23, trying to give him like Spawn of Wolverine. Like, we don't need it again. It's kind of a rehash. And the thing is that, and this gets into a continuity issue. This is completely set outside of Civil War and everything that's going on, yet happening at the same time. And it just doesn't make any sense. So, well,
isn't the other thing that people have bitched about is that they pay for a full issue comic book and they go buy like that? Like, aren't they really like?
There are 22 pages as far as it's not.
No, I know. I guess, but like, it doesn't feel. People have said it doesn't feel like there's enough content in it.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess. I guess considering I don't like the content that's in it, I'm okay with that. So.
I've never felt it was a good idea at all to ever explore his origins, and I feel like there's nothing good has come out of that.
Right, I agree. It should be a mystery. I agree. So,
I agree with that, but I've never read the book. I don't care because I don't want to read the book. So I've said one thing or another.
I read that original miniseries, you know, where they revealed his true upbringing and stuff, and
by origin, Jenkins the Destroyer.
Yeah.
that's horrible.
That's awesome.
And just nothing good I think has come out of that. As for JLA, I actively dislike this book. Ron doesn't, I think, and Josh enjoys it. So
I like it.
I like it. No, I more like it than I don't like it.
So I think the idea that we all dislike it is wrong. It's just me. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But then again, my opinion counts the most towards JLA.
Right. And and apparently we're all morons because we couldn't follow through the last couple of issues. But they were a bit confusing. You got to admit that. So.
I like it a lot, and I can tell you what happened.
All right, then. So what happened? No, I'm just kidding.
I'm also not a really big fan of Ed Bennis's work either.
All right. So we got a request for our next email. So, Josh.
Oh, Jesus. I'm not a fucking monkey.
Do it!
It says Stuart from London. London, England. What sort of Londoner would you like?
Just do it.
Just do it in whatever your best one.
I was on holiday. I'm going to do it in the worst British accent ever.
Do it.
I was on holiday in Scotland recently and I needed to get myself some graphic novels. I bought Jonah Hex, Face of Violence. I feel bad for Stuart. I'm not making fun of you.
Get through the email.
Okay. I thought it was absolutely fantastic with great gritty stories. I only got it because of your recommendations, so thanks very much. Are there any other Hex graphic novels I should get? I've never read any Hex before now because of the strip of skin across his mouth always put me off. It just seems impractical and unrealistic. I know it's now part of the character's ironic identity.
Iconic.
Well, that works too. Do you think an artist could get away with moving it more to the edge of the mouth, or a future writer is getting Hex to cut it off with a hot knife? I also bought American Born Chinese, which he was glad to see in the UK Waterstones. It was also superb, and thanks for the recommend on that as well. I'm listening to loads of your previous podcasts and giving me lots of ideas for what to buy. Keep up the great work.
Can you say garage?
Garage.
Garage.
Stuart in London, England.
For BBC, this is Stuart.
I think I did like three accents there.
You did. Every time you stopped, you started a new one.
Sorry.
Okay, so go Hex.
I must sound like Don Cheadle in Ocean's 11. Worst accent ever.
That's how he looks. I mean, his face, the skin, the flap of skin is there.
That's the point.
I love that. That's what turned him off from reading the book. He's like, ooh, creepy.
Well, that's why Connor hates Strong Guy.
Yeah. Why?
He looks stupid.
He's got a little doodle of hair.
Yeah.
I love Strong Guy. Okay.
You can't change that. That's the point. he looks that way, and that has, and you know, besides just the scar on his face, you know, that's part of why he's outcast from society. But I think his body is also pretty effed up too.
The scar on his face is from when he got burned by the Indians. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And tortured by that other group.
But even if you were to cut that, his eyes all.
His eyes all messed up. It's an outward appearance. It frightens people. It's part of his identity.
I don't even like it. Okay. So what book should he read? What other should he get?
Well, there's that old the book you got us for Christmas, Ron.
Showcase edition, which just came out. Yeah, the old black and white reprints of the 70s ones. Yeah,
which are much more hardcore than you would think. But they were done in the 70s, so they read a little like 70s books, but not so much in a bad way. So if you like that, as far as modern stories, like,
but that's it. I mean, you've got all you've got. Jonah Hex is not far in.
Yeah. So that's what there is. He hasn't been around for a while. There was a couple of miniseries. Azzarello did a series called El Diablo out of Vertigo.
That was good.
That might or might not. I don't think it's in trade. A lot of people are still digging. What's his current series from Vertigo?
Loveless.
Loveless, of course. Yeah. I stopped reading it because I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, me too.
But it's really nice looking. That might be another one you can check out.
Cool.
He's not cutting the skin off.
So, Stuart, we're glad we're able to help you find some good books, and American Poor Chinese, good purchase, even though I have no idea what UK Waterstones are.
It's like their bookstore.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's just like at Borders.
So if you have – I only know things in America. If you have any any questions for us you want us to answer on the show, send us an email to contact@ifanboy.com. So now on to the voicemail. Our first one has got a good question that is up. You guys can't even do the intro. Let's just play it.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Darren from beautiful Southern California calling. Now, my question for you this week is this. Which do you guys consider to be the more essential read, Gotham Central or Sleeper? Now, I'm not asking for your Desert Island top two. If I could only have one, none of that BS. All I'm really asking is, which one should I get first? Because I want to pick up the entire series of both runs regardless. So, yeah, thanks for your help, guys. Later.
Well, I think everyone knows what I'm going to say, but my my question is, if he's going to buy them both, why not just get them both?
Because Kilpatrick is known for ridiculously huge orders of books. Well, I'm going to buy them all anyway, because he doesn't have all the money right now.
I see. Jeez. Well, we've all read. I mean, Ron's read at least part of Gotham Central. So what do you guys think?
I mean, Gotham Central Sleeper. I buy both. I'm sorry.
He's gonna get them both. He wants to know what he should start with. What's better?
Answer the question. Gotham Central.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to relate to. Because of Batman, and admittedly, Sleeper is part of the Wildstorm universe, and you don't need to know the Wildstorm universe to read it. But I think Gotham Central is a little more familiar territory.
I'm going to go ahead and say Sleeper.
No, surprise, surprise.
It's four books.
So is Gotham Central.
It's five.
Well, that's not the whole thing, though. Is that all of them?
Yeah, they're one storyline away from being all of them.
Okay, but you can read through the entire Sleeper right now, and for me, like, that was a book I just couldn't put down. I would say it was more immediately thrilling. All right, cool. Gotham Central was good. It was a slower burn.
Hey, how about you think for yourself?
If they do that, we're out of a show.
Oh, right. Yeah, no. Yeah, yeah. I mean, take your pick. I mean, like, Sleeper's a little more intrigue, and Gotham Central's a little more cop procedural, you know?
You're not going to go wrong either way, really.
Yeah, exactly. You can't blow that pick.
It's like trying to decide between a porterhouse and a filet mignon. You know, you're going to win either way.
Oh, why'd you do that?
Sorry.
Oh, hungry.
All right. On to our next voicemail.
Yo, it's Sanchez. I was wondering, do you guys have any, like, comic shop pet peeves? I bring this up because I was at a comic shop, and I was asking if they had a book. I don't even remember what it was. But I said, hey, did you have this book? And they just point to the racks. Like, I wasn't just looking there for five fucking minutes, idiots. I hate that shit. So, what pisses you off about comic shops? Peace.
I haven't had these horrible experiences with comic shops, but I've heard them from all sorts of people. I've been really lucky, I guess.
Well, that's the problem with most comic shops, is most places are run like that.
Yeah, no, I know. I think I've been to just great comic shops where, like, I either knew what I wanted and didn't have to deal with it, or I, like, there were great guys who worked there.
I've had two similar encounters at two different stores. One was way back when Pedro and Me came out. I went to the store, and this was one of the big stores in Manhattan, and I asked the guy, I couldn't find it on the rack, and I asked the guy at the counter for Pedro and Me, and he looked at me like I had four heads.
Nice.
Which was amazing because it was a big book. And then a similar thing happened at a smaller store when the first CSI comic came out to a lot of fanfare. I asked him, and he was like, "What? If it's not Marvel, I don't know what that is."
I've been lucky enough to be shopping for the past 10 years at a great store. But back in like the 90s, I worked at a store where the guy who worked there just belittled everything I purchased. It was just like I'd walk up there and like every comic's like, "Oh, X-Men, come on!"
I forgot about
and, like,
that.
I was like, "I like it though." But Sanchez, if you tune into Around Comics this week, another podcast, Connor and I were both on it on the show. I don't know if it's either Monday or Thursday, one of the shows. But their whole theme for the episode was comic shop horror stories. Or like what makes a good comic shop, what makes a bad comic shop, that sort of thing. So you can probably hear a lot of people griping about similar topics. So
I mean, the best thing you can do is don't go to that shop anymore.
If you can, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He lives in the city. He's got options.
That's true.
Totally. So
a lot of people don't. If you're stuck out in, like a small town somewhere, you've got the one shop and you have to go into the Android Dragon.
Comics for Collectors?
Yeah.
Den, yeah. Oh, comics for collectors. Don't stop. Okay. All right. I'm very excited for our last voicemail.
Hey, guys. It's Mike from L.A. How are you? Sorry, I missed you in San Francisco. I'll see you at Comic-Con. Really quick question. I see all these posts and editorials and all this other stuff about the mystery in 52 and whether or not I've solved it yet. And do you guys know what the hell they're talking about? Because there's a mystery, and I just thought it was about Black Adam getting really pissed off. So I was curious what you thought about that. And aren't we all happy that those Ghost Rider advertisements are gone from the comic books? Because there were a lot of them, and they made me angry. All right, see you guys in San Diego. Bye.
Yeah, I that's a real good question. I don't know. I don't even know what the mystery is.
They actually haven't touched on it in months.
Every like 5 or 6 issues, somebody goes, 52! And yeah. I guess that's supposed to mean something?
I've actually read it more in the back page in the DC Nation column than I've read in the comic,
Just following the story. I don't know if there is a mystery or
there is. Well, there the big advertisement in the comics is, have you solved the mystery yet?
Yeah. I don't know what the mystery is. What is the question? I can't give the answer.
I didn't study. I wasn't aware there'd be an exam.
It's totally true. I mean, oh, God.
It's not just me, right?
No.
That's funny. It's like Didio's trying to sell us something. Listen, we're already buying the book. If you're not buying the book by now, you're not going to start now.
Dude, that's fucked up. Think about it. That's crazy. So,
I'm curious what the mystery is and what the solution is.
And, like, all the things. I'm like, I was like, isn't it that Booster Gold wasn't really dead? Didn't we finish that?
It's like you flip back to the comics and like, crap, did I miss something? It's
I'm not reading those again.
Oh, God.
I actually might. I won't.
All right, cool. So if you have a question, if you're dying to know the answer to a mystery, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. And as aforementioned, you can also email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
So. You can also go to ifanboy.com for all the in-depth discussion on the weekly books and all of the other topics that come up across the week. And there's also the link to the forums where you can bring up your own topics or ramble on about the nonsense that goes on there.
And then, of course, every single Wednesday, 3 p.m. East Coast time, noon on the West Coast, and whatever the times in the middle are.
The flyover times, whatever.
Flyovers, yeah.
When I was driving across the country, I had such a hard time with that. Wait, what time is it now? Like, we were... Anyway. This last week was the Big Alan Moore Show. We have a great one coming up this week.
Yep. So like Josh said, every Wednesday at 8 o'clock. But also, if you're a fan of IPTV and you like Revision 3, you should check out the Totally Rad Show, which launched last week. That comes out on Tuesdays. That's by our friends Dan and Alex and Jeff. And they're doing a great show about geeks, things geeks are into, movies, video games. They're going to touch on a little bit of stuff, comics. First episode was awesome, so we strongly urge you guys to go check it out. So.
Yes. Don't forget to go to frapper.com/ifanboy and put your pin in the Frapper map and represent yourself amongst the hordes of people all over the globe.
Lest you be doing some spacing, you can go to myspace.com/ifanboy and join the hordes of friends we have, because we'd like more, or comicspace.com/ifanboy, and when they figure out what to do with that website, we'll be all ready to go.
And also, if you dig the show, you can go to Podcast Alley or Podcast Pickle or iTunes, and you can give us a rating or give us some reviews. We saw a couple of new reviews trickle in for the video show. Thank
review
you so
much. Review it more.
Yeah, please. Let people know what you think of it. I mean, it's the best way for us to get feedback other than you guys telling us we suck via email.
Also, if people go in and they're looking to see if there's something they like and they see lots of reviews or, you know, something that looks good, then more people will watch it, and then we can keep doing it.
You can also go to dig.com, which is DIGG.com, and there's a podcast section. In the podcast section, there's an arts section, and in that section, there's the iFanboy, and you can dig the show. You can dig each episode, and you can
dig other podcasts.
Yeah, dig all the other shows you like. They're all in there.
And finally, you can if you like what we're doing and you want to see more of it, you want to help support the cause, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations, and there's a little tip jar. You can pay through PayPal, and any donations are appreciated. So, all right, cool. Well, it's a beautiful day here in San Francisco where I am, so I'm going to go hang out now. So,
well, fine then.
He's going to go smoke pot with his hippie friends.
Totally on
the
hate.
He's going to talk about overthrowing the government and marrying men to men. And then wait, what did the mayor do?
Drank.
He's a, oh yeah.
No, did yes. he on his wife?
Well,
his campaign.
Yeah,
manager?
He did. He did that too. He did
nice.
That too. Yeah,
love that.
Yeah, it was a good job by that guy. Put McGreevy to shame. Totally put McGreevy to shame. But,
well, that's all, yeah. Folks.
Dun, all dun, right, dun, have dun, a good dun. Week.
Bye. Bye. Me.